Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
All right, so tonight's discussion of Gemara is about something everybody's familiar with. But you'll discover that there are legalities and details that you never thought of. Most Jews attend the Seder. The Seder night is the most well-attended Jewish event of the year, even eclipsing Yom Kippur night. Yom Kippur, everybody's in shul, but not everybody's in shul. Seder night, people come to a Seder. Unfortunately, some of them don't make it at night, and some of them don't make a Seder, and don't know what to do for a Seder, but the Seder is very, very high on the Jewish consciousness. And the artifacts in the Seder are emotional touchstones. Everybody knows what matzah looks like. Kuf tes vav amud aleph. Kuf tes vav is page 115 of the Gemara.
Yes.
That's how we write 15.
Yes.
In Hebrew, write tes vav.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, so we'll soon talk of which page in the moment, but one of the things people are familiar with is matzah and wine and maror. Everybody's familiar with maror, the bitter herbs? You like bitter herbs? No? How do we eat the bitter herbs? We eat them in a sandwich. Do you remember that? A story with Hillel, and a story with a sandwich. So we eat matzah, and then when we finished eating matzah, we eat maror. And after we finished eating matzah and finished eating maror, then we say, Kenasahil bizmancha besamigdash reikayam, and we have matzah and maror together. Yes, dipping in charoses, but dipping in charoses, you're not eating charoses. There's no large amount of charoses. So far, everybody's familiar? Yes? You know about the sandwich? Okay. But there's going to be a depth to that sandwich that you never thought of. And that's what we're learning today's Gemara. Today's Gemara is going to open our eyes to a whole new reality of legal jurisprudence, of ideas and concepts that are behind something as simple as a sandwich. And of course, the fulfillment of a mitzvah, and so on and so forth. So, with that little preamble, let's move into Limud HaGemara. On Maseches Pesachim, which was once upon a time Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, the first half of the Masechet dealt with chametz and preparing one's house or one's property for Pesach, and how we get rid of chametz, which is a very bad thing. We shouldn't own on Pesach. And then the second half of the Masechet talks about Kodshim, talks about the Korban Pesach, which we unfortunately have not been able to fulfill because Mashiach has not been here. Hopefully this year, Mashiach will be here. And there's a whole separate part of the Masechet, which is Kodshim or Beit HaMikdash, offering related. Usually, they are in two different parts of the Gemara. We have Kodshim areas of the Gemara, that's one part of the Gemara, and then we have areas of the Gemara that deal with things like a Yom Tov, how we keep a Yom Tov. And since on Pesach, the two are kind of intermingled and mixed. That's why it ends up becoming known as Pesachim, plural, two Pesachs. Now, the Korban Pesach is eaten at the Seder. So it turns out that the 10th chapter of Maseches Pesachim is all about the Seder and all about the things we do. So the Gemara now begins with a discussion about eating matzah and maror together. About eating different, doing different mitzvahs together at the same time, what we would call colloquially killing two birds with one stone. So the Gemara picks up now in the middle of page 115, side A, Kuf Tezvav Amar Aleph. Omar Ravina said, Omar Hillel said, and he said it, Mishmei the Gemara. He said it in the name of the Gemara. Now the truth is, we colloquially refer to this as Gemara, but there is nobody named Gemara. So how could you say something in the name of Gemara? And the probable and likely explanation of this that most Mefarshim accept is that there is an oral tradition that goes from generation to generation, and that oral tradition goes from generation to generation. It's called Gemara. Gemara means to learn. Like it says, Gemidi, we learn from or derive from. So since Gemara means learning that's derived from or lessons that are derived from, so therefore it means something that was passed down from generation to generation, or as Rashi elsewhere says, ish mipi ish, from sage to sage, from rabbi to rabbi. That's how this was passed down. So Ravina says that I heard from Hillel in the name of the Gemara. What did he hear? You'll be very surprised to hear what Hillel said. Because you know the Hillel of the sandwich. It should really be called the Hillel. It's only called a sandwich because there was a guy named Earl Sandwich who was at a gambling table, and after gambling for like 20 hours, he was starving, and he took a few pieces of meat, cold meat, and he slapped two pieces of bread on either side, and that's what he ate after sitting at the blackjack table for, I don't know, a crazy amount of time. And his name was Earl Sandwich. And from then on, that became very popular, and that's how the sandwich got its name. But like everything else, we were doing it many, many years before. So really, you should call it a Hillel, not a sandwich. Not even a lafa. But at any rate, you know Hillel from the sandwich. But here we say that Hillel says, Mishmei di Gemara, in the name of an oral tradition, Loi lichrich, loi nichrich inish matzah umar bahadi hadadi. A person should not sandwich the matzah and the marar together. Shouldn't do that. V'nechol. And then eat it. Why? Mishum de svira lan, the Gemara explains, because he was of the opinion that matzah bizman hazeh de eraisa, that matzah in today's day and age, meaning when there is no Beit HaMikdash, no temple, is still biblically mandated. And maror, and eating, the consumption of bitter herbs, is the rabbanon, is only rabbinic. So what? Well, what happens is, va'asi maror de rabbanon, umevatalei mitzvah de raisa. The maror, which is of rabbinic origin, will come and nullify or outweigh the biblical mitzvah of consuming matzah. So a few things have to be clarified here. The first thing that you have to know is that the Hillel who is being talked about here is not the famous Hillel, or at least not the most famous Hillel. The truth is that the most famous Hillel is known as Hillel HaZakin, the elder Hillel. And there is another famous Hillel, and this may be that Hillel, or maybe not. We don't know with certainty. He's called the Hillel HaKatan, the small Hillel. And he comes only generations later, 9 generations after the original Hillel. We know him because he is the sage who is responsible for putting our calendar together. So we say Hillel put the calendar together. We're not referring to Hillel HaZakin, we're referring to Hillel HaKatan, who lives generations after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Hillel and Shammai lived in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Hillel and Shammai's disciples lived in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Now, we're talking about Hillel's son, Rabbi Gamliel, according to some, his grandson, but certainly, according to most opinions, his son, Rabbi Gamliel, was alive when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Hillel HaKatan is 8 generations after that. So in the time when the Beis HaMikdash was standing, as we say in our Seder night, Kein Asa Hillel, his mancha Beis HaMikdash, Hayakayim. So this is what Hillel used to do when the Beis HaMikdash was standing. Hayakayrach, he would sandwich Pesach, matzah, umar, the korban Pesach. Obviously, we're talking about the time the Beis HaMikdash is standing. You have a korban Pesach. And matzah, the unleavened bread, and mor, the bitter herbs. V'ya'ichlam b'yachad. Well, let me first finish, and then you'll tell me if I confuse you still. So the Hillel that you know of, the famous Hillel the Elder, lived in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Everything about the statement that Ravina just made, everything about the statement, is not talking about the time of the Beis HaMikdash. This statement is talking about a time when matzah is min haTorah, matzah is biblical, and when bitter herbs are only rabbinic. Allow me to explain. Later on in a few pages, on page 120, the Gemara is going to tell us that according to the Torah, it says be'erev teichlu matzahs. So the Torah says, ordains that on the night of Pesach, on the night, not erev Pesach, has to be night. So on the night of Pesach, you must eat matzah. And then it says, in a separate verse, Amatzot umarorim yochluhu. It's talking about the Korban Pesach, and it says that the Korban Pesach must be eaten together with matzah and together with mar. So the Gemara says, that means, when is it a mitzvah to eat maror? When is it a biblical mitzvah? When are we responsible, by dint of Torah ordination, to consume maror on the night of Pesach? When we have a Korban. Because it says about the korban, that when you have a korban Pesach, when you have a Pesach offering, so the sacred, a holy paschal offering has to be eaten together with maror. That's what the Torah says. What if I don't have a holy paschal offering? What if I don't have a korban Pesach? Then I have no obligation to eat maror. Because the Torah never came and said, Be'erev tochlum b'maror, in the evening you should eat maror. The Torah said that you should eat a korban Pesach, and that the korban Pesach should be eaten with matzah and maror. So the Gemara reasons that in today's day and age, there is no obligation for you and I sitting outside of a Beis HaMikdash, not having a Korban Pesach. There is no obligation for us to eat Mara. What is there an obligation for us to eat? Matzah. Why? Because the Torah explicitly says, Ba'erev Teichlo Matzahs. And since the Torah says it explicitly, and since when the Torah tells us to eat matzah, it doesn't say eat matzah and anything else. It says just eat matzah. So I know that regardless of what else is going on, I have a mitzvah to eat matzah. In other words, the mitzvah of matzah stands on its own. The mitzvah of maror does not. So ask me the question. So why do we eat? Oh, so first of all, obviously.
We're talking about the Hillel HaKatan.
Exactly.
Who lived long after. So how, who came up with this?
So look into the Gemara. Look into the Gemara. That you're not even looking at the Gemara. The whole point of the Gemara is that this Hillel said, Loi Nechreich! That you shouldn't eat it together. Aha. I told you not listening. So one Hillel says, eat it together. Not only you may, you must eat it together. And now we have a Hillel who tells us don't eat it together. Which Hillel? Would the right Hillel please stand up? The answer is, there was at least two Hillels, and maybe more Hillels. We theorize that this is probably, Yaivet says, this is probably Hillel HaKatan. This is probably the Hillel who's a descendant of the original Hillel. This is probably that Hillel, but not necessarily. We don't know that with certainty. A sage named Hillel had a teaching that he received from generation to generation before him. And the teaching was, don't sandwich the matzah and maror. Don't do that. Why? What's wrong with doing that? That's how our great-granddaddy did it. Hillel said you had to do it that way. Says the Gemara, you can't do it that way, because in today's day and age, we have a situation where bizman hazeh, we have matzah, which is de'oraisa, matzah, which is biblically mandated, maror, which is dirabbanan, maror, which is only rabbinically mandated, va'asi maror, maror will arrive, who is but dirabbanan, umevatelei, and it will overwhelm and nullify the matzah, which is the oraisa. So, the first thing that I wanted everybody to understand here is why this hill can't be the original hill. That's clear, right? You got that. I also wanted you to understand that there is a big distinction between matzah and maror in today's day and age. That matzah would be biblical and maror would be rabbinic. Now that we have these two principles in place, now I would like to introduce you to a third and very, very nuanced Torah principle. And the principle is called bittul. Bittul in a legal terminology means that something no longer is identifiable independently. And since it is no longer identifiable, meaning it no longer retains independence, that it now has ceased to exist for all practical purposes. It does not exist anymore. It was once, it is no longer. Simple example. Bittul in a graphic or literal sense means that something happened to displace or to pull apart the material reality. In other words, if we define something by its density, and if something came along to destroy its density, no, now it no longer exists. One possibility. Another possibility is the density has become absorbed into a larger density. And because it's become part of a larger density, it no longer exists independently. Here's a silly little joke. What did the little wave say to the big wave?
Goodbye.
He said, big brother, soon we crash into the seashore and we are finished. So the big wave said to the little wave, he said, foolish little brother, soon we crash into the seashore and become part of the great ocean. In other words, that there's a principle, something doesn't have to be destroyed, but something simply becomes absorbed into something much larger than it. Practically speaking, it no longer exists on its own. Let's give you
a very, very simple example that everybody here could relate to. When we were fighting for independence in Israel, so there were a number of different fighting forces. One of the fighting forces was called the Palmach. The early Zionists will say that the Palmach, they really created. They were the ones who really fought. And that could be. And they have a whole museum for them. They exist. The Palmach does not exist anymore. What happened to the Palmach? What happened to the soldiers of the Palmach? What happened to the men and women? Many of them were killed. Many of them were killed. But some of them lived on. And some of them became prime ministers. And some of them became some of the most prominent people in the modern state of Israel. What happened to the Palmach? The answer is, the Palmach and the Etzel and the Lehi and all these other little fighting groups were disbanded. And they together formed Chayalei Tzva Haganah Yisrael, what we know as Tzahal, the IDF. So, if there's two ways one could say that a fighting force ceased to exist. If there would have been, chas v'shalom, a victory for our enemies, and the enemies would have destroyed an army, would have destroyed, then it's finished. Another way, a positive way, is that it got absorbed into something larger. Does that make sense? Two forms of bittul. The Wehrmacht, Baruch Hashem, no longer exists. What happened? The Allies destroyed it. So what happened to the Wehrmacht soldiers? I don't know. They went back to becoming shopkeepers and who knows what else. That army, that structure was disbanded. Finished. So sometimes when we talk about bittul, we mean something doesn't exist anymore. And sometimes when we talk about bittul, it means it becomes absorbed into something else. On a literal level, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference how or why it isn't here. The fact is, it is not. Let's not get emotional about this. Was it destroyed or absorbed into something larger? Did it become something greater? It doesn't matter. It's not the point. The point is that this entity, this existence, this reality, simply isn't. Isn't. Hitler wanted to kill us, Yimach Shemoi. He wanted to kill us through destruction, physical destruction of the Jewish people. And our other enemies want to love us to death. And assimilation is as dangerous as the concentration camps. Because if chas v'shalom assimilation goes unchecked, and Jews continue chas v'shalom to intermarry and to drift further and further away and don't learn Torah and don't keep mitzvahs, what happens eventually? Which of course will never happen. But in theory, what could happen? We aren't. If you want to be, then you have to be. You have to identify. You can't be because somebody hates me. That's not a reason to be. You can't define yourself dialectically because of anti-Semites or haters or racists. You have to know, who are you? Who are you? He says, who am I? I'm a Yid. What does it mean to be a Yid? Ah, Yid. A Yid is a special person that has a unique neshama and is considered part of Hashem's children. You understand what I'm saying? This is the concept of bittul. Now, let's take this a little bit further. Sometimes bittul is very, very literal. Sometimes bittul is understood in a tangible fashion. Here's a little story. It's a good story. It once happened in a certain shtetl that there was going to be a wedding. Okay. So they shechted a goat. And this is wonderful. Everybody was excited. The whole shtetl was coming to the wedding. Think fiddler on the roof. That part is accurate. More or less. The pogrom is a joke over there. But this is like a wedding. The whole shtetl came. What happened? What happened is that they were cooking this gigantic stew for the whole shtetl, to feed everybody. And somebody, by mistake, was walking by and drinking milk, and somebody pushed somebody, and somebody fell, and a little bit of milk fell into the stew. And the stew is boiling over, and it's, before you know it, the milk is gone. And they say, 1 second. They were not ignorant Jews. They knew that if a little bit of milk goes into a big stew of meat, then unless there is 60% larger volume of meat, then this stew is not kosher. And they made a quick calculation, and they realized that the cup of milk was not outweighed by the stew and the vegetables and the broth. It just wasn't there. But once upon a time, people would go to a Rav anyway. Ask a Rav. You have to ask a Shaila. So they came to the Rav. And the Rav said, give me 2 hours. 2 hours later, they came back. The Rav said, the stew is kosher. And he saw them hesitating. And he said, and I will be at the wedding tonight, and I will eat. The whole city is, how could this be? Everybody knows they measured it 5 times before they went to the Rav. They just went to the Rav to rat it. Everybody was standing and watching, and there was a chuppah, and after the chuppah there was a meal, and the Rav was eating, the whole city was holding their breath. If the rabbi ate the stew, okay, we don't know what he's thinking, but if he eats it, they'll eat it too. And that's the story. Many, many, many years later, the story came out. What happened was that the Rav, as soon as they left, immediately sent for the milchiker, for the milkman. You know, Tevye? Pasa Tevye, milkman, everybody had a job? He called the milkman in and he closed the door and he said to him, listen here, I want you to tell me how much water you put in your milk. And the man said, me? What? The rabbi accuses me of putting, what are you talking about? I would never do so. The rabbi says, shh, relax. It's fine. I'm not going to prosecute you. I'm not going to tell anybody. Just tell me how much. I never put water. Please, the rabbi says, this is very important. I promise. I will never breathe a soul. You'll never hear. Anyway, after a few minutes of this, the man starts to cry. And he says, don't consider me a sinner. It's not my fault. I have children to feed. The stupid cow is not giving enough milk. It's not my fault. Please forgive me. I was, it's all fine. Just tell me how much. He tells him how much. It was a lot of water. Okay. The rabbi made the calculation. And the amount of milk after the amount of water was takabatal b'shishim. Oh, so now they figured out what happened all those years later. So, the benefit of doing the wrong thing. Okay, that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is I'm trying to give you a graphic analysis, an example of how bittul works. Bittul works when there's a larger amount, it's no longer there. Now, it is conceivable that somebody would have a stew that's 60 pints of broth, and now that a pint of milk went into it, now it's 61 pints. I mean, the volume is larger. You could now fill more plates. So what do you mean there's no milk? There used to be 60 pints, and now there's 61 pints. So you can't tell me there's no. There is, I mean, the milk is in there. The liquid's in there. True, I say. But since it fell into a boiling cauldron, and the person was stirring when it fell in, it didn't fall on a piece of meat. It fell straight into the broth. And it was being stirred until somebody realized that meat was there, and it was equally distributed. So it no longer exists on its own. And because it no longer exists on its own, we don't have a bishul, a cooking of basar v'chalav. We have a mixture which is technically permitted. I know you're thinking, I would never eat that. But if you use any kind of things with kosher signs on it, you eat all kinds of things like that. Because that's the reality. Mistakes happen. And we follow the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says it's good, then it's good. The point then is, you cannot say there is no milk. Of course there's milk. But it's not milk. There's liquid, and there is a quantum physics that I don't understand the difference of quantum physics of milk and of lemonade, but there is a quantum physics difference. There is some kind of distinction, but the quantum physics that is milk, the molecular structure, the subatomic structure that is milk, is no longer, doesn't exist. It's not here. It's been equally distributed because there was heat, and now it has become part of something grander. That is called bittul. You got that? Now, there's two kinds of bittul. There's bittul of volume, and then there's bittul of taste, which would mean that really, min ha-teira, according to most opinions, if somebody tasted the stew, we don't follow this practically. But if you have an expert chef would come, a non-Jewish chef would taste the stew, he says, there's no meat in this. We say, then it's bittul. It's bittul. Now we use 60, which is very, very large. It's an enormous amount in comparison, because usually something, unless it's made to flavor like salt or like a sharp spice, it becomes overwhelmed very quickly. The taste goes away very quickly. So bittul could sometimes be it's mevatel. It does away with the taste. Or sometimes bittul can mean it does away with the identification. It can't identify it. It no longer appears as an independent existence. And the question is, what in heaven does that have to do with matzah and murr? What is going on over here? He says, well, maybe the murr is going to be mevatel the matzah. So this would go something like this then. I put the matzah and the murr in my mouth. It's a sandwich. I'm chewing it together. So don't think too much about what that looks like. But the reality is, when you put something into your mouth, the moment it gets into your mouth, your teeth are working at pulverizing. And along with your teeth working on pulverizing, the enzymes in your mouth are working on decomposition. After a certain amount of time, usually a few seconds, or maybe 30 or 40 seconds, what went into your mouth is no longer recognizable. It's puree. It's a different form. It's not the same form anymore. Sometimes a mother will chew up the food for the baby. There's no other way to puree the food to the baby. The baby doesn't have the ability to chew. The baby doesn't have the ability to digest. And if you put whole amounts of food in the baby's stomach, you're going to get a chas v'shalom, make the baby very sick. So the mother will use her own ability to pulverize. She'll chew it herself and create a puree for the baby under extenuating circumstances. What's the point? The point, my dear friends, is that once the matzah and murr go into the mouth, and the person chews up the matzah and murr, and then they swallow. What did they swallow? Did they swallow matzah or did they swallow murr? On a very literal level, we could say if there was much more leaf than there was cracker, what did I actually taste? I tasted murr. Furthermore, the bitter herbs are a very powerful taste. The matzah doesn't have that much of a taste. So maybe the matzah is now going to become bottle to the murr. I don't have a mitzvah. Before, I was so cool. I was doing a mitzvah. I thought, I'm taking the matzah and the murr, yeah, on your plate to look very nice. But putting matzah and murr on your plate is not a mitzvah. The mitzvah is taking a matzah and murr from your plate and putting it into your stomach. And in order for it to get to your stomach, you cannot simply open a little hatch here and put it inside your stomach. And if you would do that, you still wouldn't fulfill the mitzvah. It has to go down your throat. That's when you fulfill the mitzvah. And going down your throat in order for it to fulfill the mitzvah, it first has to go through the system of pulverization in your mouth where it gets turned into puree. And after it's pureed in your mouth, then it can go down your throat. Hey, when it's down your throat, it felt like maror. I didn't taste matzah. One second. If that's the case, what does this have to do with a rabbinic or a biblical mitzvah? What difference does it make? If the concern is that I should taste matzah or taste murr, then how did the great-great-grandfather of this Hillel say you have to eat matzah and murr together? Maybe you had matzah, maybe you had murr, maybe you had another. You had nothing. You were busy, it wasn't matzah and it wasn't murr. It was a new kind of reality in your mouth. How does this work? But look in the Gemara. The Gemara says that the discussion is, he says, you know why you shouldn't put matzah and murr together? Not because the taste of the murr is going to outweigh the taste of the matzah. You shouldn't put matzah and murr together because if you will do that, the matzah is the raisa, the matzah is biblical. The murr today is only rabbinic. Then now what's going to happen is that one is going to be mevatel the other. Osi murr drabonon umavatalela mitzvah de raisa. A biblical mitzvah will be outweighed by a rabbinic mitzvah. So we're not talking about food. We're talking here about mitzvah. Which is why I started off by telling you about different kinds of bittul. Because there is very graphic bittul of that which gets mixed into a hot stew or pulverized in your mouth. And that's quite literal, where whatever was identifiable is no longer identifiable. Not by taste, not by appearance, by nothing. It's now a new reality. And why are we worried then about the matzah being overwhelmed by the murr? Very simple. Because the reality is that murr is very strong. And matzah is kind of bland. In fact, that's a requisite. If the matzah has salt or sugar or oil, it's not lechem oini. It may be kosher for Pesach, it may not be. That's a discussion for another night. But one thing it certainly isn't. It's not a bread of affliction. So since it's not bread of affliction, matzah is bland. And because matzah is bland, we even make a point on the night of Pesach not to use salt, because we don't want to take away the taste of matzah. It means even a little bit of salt could take away the taste of matzah. And one of the reasons we're not supposed to eat on Erev Pesach is that the matzah should be eaten with gusto. It's not so easy to eat tasteless crackers with gusto, unless you're really hungry. People say, oh, the food is so good. They say, well, it's not that good. You're just really hungry. Because if you're really hungry, anything becomes really good. And we try to make ourselves so hungry that the matzah should be delicious. Fingers slicking, lips smacking matzah. You must be meshuga. What? Shmur matzah? Well, I haven't eaten all day, so therefore it's all... I'm glad you think it's tasty. I never heard of anybody talking about biting into a succulent piece of matzah. Tasty. If you put things on top of it, it's tasty. Matzah is not, nobody when they have an image, think of a delicious food, nobody thinks first of matzah. Do me a favor. That's not exactly, that's not the stuff that people's lusts for food are made of. It's not. Maybe with something else, but not matzah by itself. So therefore, we're so worried about the matzah tasting good. Anyway, listen, Ami, maybe you like matzah, but you're the exception, not the rule. And since we talk, Torah is given to everybody, not the unique people who like to chew on dry crackers. So therefore, the Torah wants everybody to eat matzah with a sense of gusto, enjoying the matzah. So he said, don't eat anything all day. What we do know from this is that matzah, the taste of matzah is not very powerful. It's very easily overwhelmed. So what do we care? So the murr will taste. They'll taste murr more. What's the difference? It's all a mitzvah. No good. That could have worked all those generations ago in the time of the first hill, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, when it was all biblical. But in today's day and age, where we don't have a Beis Hamikdash and subsequently don't have a Korban Pesach, there is no sacred Paschal offering. Then the murr is the Rabbanon. If the murr is the Rabbanon, if the murr is only rabbinic, that it's going to overwhelm the biblical, and because it is of a rabbinic ordination, the problem is that the taste, you're eating murr, you're not even tasting matzah. And murr is the rabbanon, it's only a rabbinic ordination, it's not even something the Torah mandated you to eat tonight. And what did your person eat on the night of Pesach? Say, how was the Seder? Wonderful. What did you eat? Murr. What about matzah? I didn't taste any matzah. I mean, there was some matzah in that mix, but I didn't taste, I saw it, but I didn't taste it. So you didn't even do the mitzvah. What's going on over here? This is one way of understanding it. Another way of understanding it is that this business of bittul, this business of nullification, is but metaphoric. It should not be taken literally. It's not a question of what you actually taste. You could care less what you taste. What if a person has no taste buds? What if he has the flu? You don't care. That's not what it's about. It's about doing the mitzvah. And doing the mitzvah means that the mitzvah has to be identifiable in and of itself. And the problem is that if I mix matzah and murr together, I have two different kinds of mitzvahs. I have a substance which is a mitzvah substance, and a substance which is a non-mitzvah substance. At least not from a biblical perspective. And since the secondary substance is not a mitzvah substance from a biblical perspective, so then therefore, if I didn't have an identifiable experience, which is the biblical substance that's sacred, I didn't have a mitzvah. So if it was all a mitzvah, if they were both minatayra, I don't care. It's all mitzvah substance. This mitzvah substance, that mitzvah substance, a mitzvah is a mitzvah. It was substance of mitzvah. But if from a biblical perspective, the murr today is just green salad. It's not sacred. It's like eating murr on Hanukkah. It's not a mitzvah to eat murr on Hanukkah. It's not a mitzvah to eat murr on Purim. Not even a Rosh Hashanah. It's not a mitzvah. So you can eat salad. Salad's fine. You can use romaine lettuce. Make sure you check it real good for the bugs. But you can make it for your salad any day, any night of the year. It's not sacred. You can also eat matzah every night of the year, except before Pesach. But guess what? It's just matzah. It's just a cracker. It's not sacred. When does the Torah come along and say, oh, this is sacred? When does it make this sacred substance? When does it make the consumption sacred? On the night of Pesach. So here have a substance which the Torah identifies as sacred. And now a substance which the Torah identifies as ordinary and mundane. The Chachamim said it's sacred, but the Torah itself doesn't ratify that. What am I left with? I'm left with a bittul. I'm left with the mitzvah being displaced, which is not to be understood as much on a literal level, but more on a figurative level. The Chasam Sefer wants to take this a further level. He wants to say, it's not about substances or identifiable substances. He says, ultimately, this is all a theoretical concept of mitzvah. A biblical mitzvah has to be focused on singularly. When you do a biblical mitzvah, you're doing a biblical mitzvah. You're doing a rabbinic mitzvah, you're doing a rabbinic mitzvah. You cannot mix the two together. If you're doing both at the same time, you're actually not doing any. He says, if it's all a biblical mitzvah, then there's no problem. A matzah meraitim, put it together, no issue. But he says, if it's not a biblical mitzvah, and then you were doing that along with the rabbinic mitzvah, so you did two mitzvahs, and then one mitzvah outweighs the other, or may eclipse the other. But this is not to be taken on a graphic level. This is totally in the level of theory. Anyway, this is some of the discussion that the commentaries of the Mefarshim explain in the Gemara. But this is the words of the Gemara. You got that? So it's clear? So the Gemara comes along in its classic sense. Let's take a look at Rashi quickly. Mor d'Rabbanan, we don't have Rashi, we have Rashbam here. Rashbam says that Taima Mefarash B'Shilhi Pirkin. The reason for this is explained at the very end of the Gemara. Take a look in the Rashi itself. Rashi itself says, Umavatale L'Tam L'Tam Matzah De'Raisa. The Tam. So the Rashi emphasizes the taste. Actually taste. This is the business of taste. The Gemara comes along and says, Mantana D'Shamisle Mitzvahs Ein Mavatle Zuazu. Who is the sage that said that if it would be two biblical mitzvahs, it wouldn't be an issue? You know when it's an issue? When one is a biblical mitzvah, one's a rabbinic mitzvah. What if they'll both be biblical mitzvahs? That's not an issue. Where'd you get that from? Where'd you get that? Where does it say something like that? They're two different activities. What's the difference if they're biblically mandated or not biblically mandated? In fact, they're two different activities. So Gemara says, I'll tell you who said that. Hillel! Hillel, we just talked. I told you, it's a different Hillel. Hillel says it, and this is the Hillel you're familiar with. How do we know that it's Hillel that says the two mitzvahs which are of biblical ordination cannot cancel one another? The Tanya we learned, Omru Allah, our sages said, Al Hillel, Shahayakur Chon Bivas Achas, that he would sandwich all of it together. The Eichlon, and he would eat it. Why would he do that? He says, because the Pasuk says to do it like that. Shenemar, because it is written, Al Matzeh Sumeredim Yechluhu, that it should be eaten matzah and mur together. And since Hillel said it should be eaten matzah and mur together, then we clearly don't have an issue or a concern with one overwhelming the other. Why not? Because they're all mitzvahs. And on what level of mitzvahs? The highest level of mitzvahs. The mitzvah of the commandment of the Torah. And since it's an equal commandment of the Torah, one cannot overwhelm the other. Now, you may ask a very simple question. One second. What exactly is the proof? The proof is because you eat matzah and marah together, but the Torah says that's how you should eat it. You cannot prove to me that one biblical mitzvah doesn't override or eclipse another biblical mitzvah. In that particular case, that is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is matzahs umereirim, to eat matzah and marah, that's the mitzvah. You can't prove from there that if they're both biblical mitzvahs, they wouldn't eclipse one another. Or so it would seem. So it would seem. So Rabbeinu David says something fascinating. He says, we'll go to Rabbeinu David in a second. The Ran says something amazing over here. He says, okay, he says, I understand your question. Your question was that this is no proof that one mitzvah doesn't cancel the other mitzvah. Why not? Because the Torah says to eat it like that. Says the Ran, but didn't the Torah also say Be'erev Teichlu Matzis? Answer would be yes. So if the Torah says Be'erev Teichlu Matzis, which means in the evening, at night, you should eat matzah, just matzah, then even Hillel would have to first eat matzah, and only afterwards could he eat matzah and marah together. Yes, it's true. The Torah says al matzah sumerarim yochlu. That's how you should eat the Korban Pesach. But the Torah also says be'erev teichlu matzais. Period. Full stop. Matzais. Eat matzah. And since the Torah says eat matzah, then how could Hillel say I fulfill my mitzvah of matzah by eating it together with marah and together with Korban Pesach? It should be the way we do it, which is not the way Hillel did it. We have matzah, then we have marah, then we have marah and matzah. That's not how Hillel did it. How did Hillel do it? What do we say in the Haggadah? How did Hillel do it? Exactly. Kain asa Hillel b'lan shabes ha-migdash ha-yakayim. Ha-yakayim pesach matzo marva oichel b'yachad. K'mo sh'nemer ha-matzah marim yuchlu. Says the Ran, from here we could see that Hillel was of the opinion that even though matzah is biblical, and therefore, the mitzvah to eat matzah on its own, and says, Be'erev Teichlu Matzahs, we know that's the case, because in today's day and age, it's still a mitzvah, even though we don't have a Korban Pesach, and we don't have Mar. Says Hillel, one mitzvah doesn't cancel another mitzvah. I don't have to eat the matzah separately. I can eat it together with the Maror and together with the Korban Pesach. You know why? Because they're all biblical. And since they're biblical, one doesn't cancel one another. Ah, so it is Hillel then. The way the Ran explains it is beautiful. So it is Hillel then who told us that the concept of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror is a proof that all biblical mitzvahs complement rather than eclipse one another. The Tanya says the Gemara has learned in a Braise. Omru Allah al Hillel, we said about Hillel Shoy Kedo, but Vasachasi, we eat it together, Vaichlon Shanaman al Matzah, Rei Michlu. The Gemara now says further, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan taught, Cholken Allah Chaverov. Rabbi Hillel's peers sharply disagreed. The Tanya, but we have a braisa that says, Yochol yeher kerech b'vasachas. You might think you can go and sandwich them all together, v'eichlon kederech shehillel eichlon, and do what Hillel did. No! Talmud leimar al matzah sumrerim yechlu. Which is a machlek, is what the limud here is. Some say the limud is al, doesn't say im, it says al. If it would be together, it would say im. And others say it says yechlu hu. Which, and yechlu hu is singular. Each one, yechlu hu, eat him. Even one on its own. Maskel's Ravashi. Ravashi comes and he says, what's afilu even? What's even? He should have said dafke specifically. So the Gemara says, Allah Ravashi. Ravashi says, Hai Tana Hochina Hochiktani. This is what he meant to say. You might think you will not fulfill your biblical obligation of eating the matzah and eating the myrrh unless you put them together. Unless you put them together and eat it. The way Hillel used to eat it. Talmud Leimer, the Pasuk teaches me, no. Al matzah semrul yachlu, that afilu zebef ne'atzmei, the mitzvah can be fulfilled and in fact should be fulfilled on its own. Does not mean to say you have to put them together. So now we have a little bit of an appreciation and understanding of this business of the matzah that are being either canceling each other or not canceling each other. The Rashbam adds here, and he says, Shohaya kerchem b'vasachas hazashi pesach matzah u'moror. All three together. The Rashbam says, kerchem b'vasachas pesach matzah u'moror kerchem b'kerach echad, made it in a single sandwich, a single handful, k'me kerchoy Begemi, like you're wrapping it together, like wrapping it around with something. So he made us like a laugh out of it. And Yechlu Rashi is called Echad Bifnei Atzmai, the Pasuk says. It's as if it says, Yechluhu, as if Yechlu Oisai, eat him. But no Yadaina da Pesach, the Chsiv Le'el, Vachlus Abbas. I know it's talking about the Korban Pesach. You got that? So let's recap now. Bottom line, what should we do on the night of Pesach? Well, on the night of Pesach over here, we should eat our matzah. We should eat our maror separately. And after we finish eating our matzah and our maror separately, what should we do then? Then we should have a sandwich of Pesach. Don't have Pesach. So we should have a sandwich of matzah and maror. Now, when we are eating this sandwich of matzah and maror, are we trying to fulfill the mitzvah the way Hillel wanted to fulfill the mitzvah? Are we saying, you know what, maybe Hillel's right. Maybe we can't eat the matzah by itself and the maror by itself. Maybe the only way to do it is to eat them together. So since Hillel might be right, that's why I should eat the matzah together with the maror. Is that what we're saying? Well, let me ask you the question differently. If Hillel was alive today, if you could send Hillel an email and say, Dear Rabbi Hillel, how should I eat my matzah? Would he say, oh, definitely with the maror? You're right. How do we know not? Because at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, he could do that. Why? Because it was all biblical. And one mitzvah does not eclipse or overwhelm another. By the way, for a spiritual read on the business of mitzvahs, Ein Mevat LeZuAzu, the Tiferes Shlomo once said like this. He says, you have some mitzvahs which achieve very lofty things. They're very powerful from a spiritual perspective. They bring this amazing profusion of holiness and they are connect to the highest of worlds. And he said, maybe some mitzvahs, they don't bring as much light into the world. They're not as intense, they're not as profound, they're not as powerful. And we don't know the reward of a mitzvah, and we don't even know the impact of a mitzvah. Said the Tiferet Shleima, the messenger is, when the mitzvah comes together with one another, the light of one mitzvah does not eclipse the light of another mitzvah. Why not? Because every mitzvah has something special that another mitzvah doesn't have. And therefore, no mitzvah can eclipse the other mitzvah. So therefore, a person is going to say, but this is a very big mitzvah, and that's a little mitzvah. I said, yes. But in its unique rhythm, it's unique. And therefore, no mitzvah can overwhelm another mitzvah, and a person could do a number of mitzvahs, and he could be doing them at the same time, and each mitzvah registers independently. That's another thing. Some mitzvah have to deflect the mitzvah. We have a principle, principles in place. We have a mitzvah, which some mitzvah, that's the weight of mitzvah fulfilled. Sometimes a mitzvah overrides another mitzvah. Yes. So if Hillel was alive today, Hillel would tell you, do exactly what you did. Eat matzah and eat tamara separately. No question about that. Why? Because min ha-Torah, it's only when you have Pesach, matzah and maror, and they're all biblical. The question, though, becomes, do we fulfill the mitzvah for maror today when we eat it without matzah? In other words, that's not a biblical mitzvah. That's a rabbinic mitzvah. It's a rabbinic mitzvah. And the rabbinic mitzvah is that we should eat maror. And the question we can ask now is, what was the rabbinic mitzvah? To eat maror and matzah? Or to eat maror? You understand? In other words, we're dealing here with two possibilities. Without a question, the biblical mitzvah of matzah cannot be fulfilled together with maror. That's not a question. That's biblical. This is rabbinic. No question about that. Now, there is a school of thought, a very strong school of thought, that the mitzvah of maror is a mitzvah independent. Chachamim said, eat maror. And the Rambam seems to say that very, very clearly. And according to the Rebbe's Haggadah, he says very clearly that there is actually a mitzvah, two separate mitzvahs. A mitzvah of eating matzah, that's a rabbinic mitzvah. A mitzvah of eating maror, that's a rabbinic mitzvah. And then there's a custom of eating maror and matzah. So the Griz, Chaim Brisker's son, he has this whole Torah that he wants to say that the mitzvah of maror is a mitzvah on in and of itself, based on the Rambam, and it has nothing to do with Kerach. Kerach is just a custom. But he himself acknowledges that in the Shulchan Aruch, it says that one should have in mind, when he makes a bracha for maror, one should have in mind the maror is going to eat with the Korach. He himself acknowledges that. So the Rebbe explains it very beautifully. The Rebbe doesn't, I don't know if he saw the Griz, because it wasn't printed then. But the Rebbe says, the Rebbe says that it comes out there's actually two rabbinic mitzvahs. A rabbinic mitzvah, according to Hillel, to eat maror by itself. And then a rabbinic mitzvah to eat maror together with matzah. Because the rabbis would make two separate mitzvahs. A mitzvah of maror, like the Rambam says, a mitzvah of lech al maror. And then a mitzvah of eating maror, the way maror used to be eaten together with matzah maror. So then in that case, the way the Rebbe explains it, now we understand why we have to eat the maror by itself and make a bracha on that, but we're not supposed to make an interruption. We go right on eating the maror by itself to eating the korach without making an interruption, because according to Hillel, that's the way you fulfill the second rabbinic mitzvah. Which means to say like this. Some would think that the sandwich is just a sandwich. Hillel himself would eat the matzah on its own. The Hillel, the elder Hillel, would agree with the younger Hillel. No question. Hillel himself would eat matzah separately. True. But Hillel himself would eat maror separately, and then he would eat maror and matzah separately. Because Hillel would be of the opinion that there was two ways the Chachamim ordained the concept of maror. The rabbinic maror, and then the rabbinic matzah and maror. And since those would both be rabbinic, then one wouldn't cancel the other. So it turns out, actually, that we are trying to fulfill Hillel's opinion. We're trying to fulfill Hillel's opinion, the possibility that the Chum ordained we should eat matzah and maror together, and that would not be a question, because the second matzah would not be a biblical matzah, it would be a rabbinic matzah. You get that? Kind of makes sense? This is the jurisprudence, my dear friends, behind the sandwich. This is what goes on behind a simple sandwich for a Jew. When he sits on the night of Pesach, it's a mitzvah to make a sandwich of matzah and murr. There's a whole hour's worth to discuss on how the matzah and the murr work out. And this is why we don't say zecher lehillel. We don't say or remember a zecher lemigdash. We say no, kain also hillel. And the point then would be that Rebbe says, if this is what Hillel did in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, that he would eat matzah and murr with the carbon Pesach together, Hillel would then say, if you want to do the proper rabbinic mitzvah, then the rabbi should have ordained a murr, which is in the image of the original murr, the murr and the murr, the matzah and the murr together. And that's why we don't say a zecher lemigdash. It's not a zecher lemigdash. This is dynamic. Because Hillel ate the murr that way then, Hillel would tell you, you should eat the murr that way today also. Only then it was a biblical mitzvah. Today it's a rabbinic mitzvah. But that is in and of itself, taka, the rabbinic mitzvah of murr. And that's what's in a Jewish sandwich.